Swindle should take months and the sights of the home far. And now they were standing, all six of them, Henry Wimbush, Mr. Scobie, Dennis Gombauld, Anne and Mary, by the low wall of the piggery, looking into one of the styes. "This is a good sow," said Henry Wimbush. "She had a litter of 14. 14, Mary echoed incredulously. She turned astonished blue eyes towards Mr. Wimbush, then let them fall onto the seething mass of a large vita that fermented in the sty. An immense sow reposed on her side in the middle of the pen, her round black belly, fringed with a double line of doves, presented itself to the assault of an eye of small brownish black swine. With a frantic greed, they tugged at their mother's flank. The old sow stirred sometimes uneasily, or uttered a little grunt of pain. One small pig, a runt, weakling at the litter, had been unable to secure a place at the banquet. Screaming shrilly, he ran backwards and forwards, trying to push in amongst his stronger brothers, or even to climb over their tight-looking black backs towards the maternal reservoir.
"There are 14," said Mary. "You're quite right, I counted. It's extraordinary."
"The sow next door," Mr. Wimbush went on, "has done very badly. She only had 5 in her litter. I shall give her another chance. If she doesn't do better next time, I shall fat her up a little. There's the boar," he pointed towards the farther sty. "Fine old beast, isn't he? But he's getting past his prime. He'll have to go too."
"How cruel!" Anne exclaimed.
"But how practical, how eminently realistic," said Mr. Scobie. "In this farm we have a model of sound paternal government. Make them breed, make them work, and when they're past working or breeding or begetting, slaughter them. Farming seems to be mostly indecency and cruelty," said Anne. With the ferrule of his walking stick, Dennis began to scratch the boar's long, bristly back. The animal moved a little, so as to bring himself within easier range of the instrument that evoked in him such delicious sensations. Then he stood stock still, softly grunting his contentment. The mud of years flaked off his sides in a grey, powdery scurf. "What a pleasure it is," said Dennis, "to do somebody a kindness. I believe I enjoyed scratching this pig quite as much as he enjoys being scratched. If only one could always be kind with so little expense or trouble." The gate slammed. There was a sound of heavy footsteps. "Morning, Riley," said Henry Wimbush.
"Morning, sir,"
old Riley answered. He was the most venerable of the labourers on the farm, a tall, solid man, still unbent, with grey side whiskers and a steep, dignified profile. Grave, weighty in his manner, splendidly respectable, Rowley had the air of a great English statesman of Marriott, dozens and dozens. He emphasized his point by thumping with his walking stick on the bull's leather flanks. Mr. Scogan ought to pass on his intelligence to little Scogans and Dennis to little Dennis's. The bull turned his head to see what was happening, regarded the drumming stick for several seconds, then turned back again, satisfied, it seemed, that nothing was happening. Sterility was odious, unnatural, a sin against life. Life, life, and still more life, the ribs of the placid bull resounded. Standing with his back against the farmyard pump, Dennis examined the group. Gumball, passionate and vivacious, was its center. The others stood around, listening. Henry Wimbush, calm and polite beneath his grey bowler. Mary, with parted lips and eyes that shone with the indignation of a convinced birth controller. Through half-shut eyes, smiling, and beside her stood Mr. Scogan, bolt upright in an attitude of metallic rigidity that contrasted strangely with that fluid grace of hers, which even in stillness suggested a soft movement. Gumball ceased talking, and Mary, flushed and outraged, opened her mouth to refute him. But she was too slow. Before she could utter a word, Mr. Scogan's fluty voice had pronounced the opening phrases of the discourse. There was no hope of getting so much as a word in edgeways. Mary had perforce to resign herself. "Even your eloquence, my dear Gumball," he was saying, "even your eloquence has proved inadequate to reconvert the world to a belief in the delights of mere multiplication. With the gramophone, the cinema, and the automatic pistol, the goddess of applied science has presented the world with another gift, more precious even than means, the means of dissociation. anything.